This is case 71877, Clark County versus HQ Metro LLC. Justice Perigary will not be participating. He has a conflict as to this matter. With that, counsel, Ms. Nielsen, if you're ready to proceed, please do so. If you wish to reserve time, please so state.
Yes, thank you. I would like to reserve 5 minutes in rebuttal. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Leslie Nielsen, Clark County Deputy District Attorney, here arguing on behalf of Clark County. We're here today to determine what constitutes a taking. Very simply, is it entry of an occupancy order or is it the installation of a transmission line? NV Energy filed its complaint in this case in May of 2013 to acquire a temporary construction easement and a permanent easement to install a transmission line along the south end of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department headquarters. And that project was necessary to relocate the transmission line because of Project Neon. Clark County was named as a defendant because of a recorded document showing an interest as a tenant and that Clark County had a purchase option. Parties negotiated a stipulation for occupancy during the summer of 2013, and that occupancy order was then entered in October of 2013. It gave NV Energy the right to occupy the, to enter the property and to occupy the property to install the transmission line. However, NV Energy didn't exercise its rights under the occupancy order until approximately 15 months later. So in the meantime, a year after the occupancy order, Clark County purchased the property and closed escrow in October of 2014. At that time, NV Energy had not entered into physical possession of the property. The deed, the grant bargain sale deed conveying title to Clark County contains no reservation reserving a property interest in the seller, in HQ Metro. So then it was a little over 2 months later, in January of 2015, that NV Energy exercised its rights under the occupancy order to come on the property, to enter into possession, to install the transmission line. At that point, Clark County, of course, was the owner. HQ Metro's manager had relied on a TOD Federico appraisal report when it negotiated the sale price to Clark County. And Mr. DeFederico's appraisal concluded the value was $225 million, and he makes no mention of any reduction in value due to the transmission line easement or the installation of the transmission line. Yet a year later, the same appraiser, in this case, in discovery, provides an appraisal concluding that the easement and the transmission line do affect the value of the property to the tune of over $1.5 million. Thus, Clark County was not paying a discounted price that reflected any discount whatsoever for the easement or the transmission line. In arguing our counter motion for partial summary judgment in the district court, we provided affidavit and attached appraisals showing, and the purchase and sale agreement showing that there was nothing in those documents showing that there was a discount associated with this project. HQ Metro had the opportunity at that time in filing their reply to provide other affidavits or other evidence there, that there was indeed a discount, that Clark County was paying a discounted purchase price for the property. But there were no affidavits, no appraisals, no correspondence, nothing that was submitted with the reply.
Ms. Nielsen, I have lots of questions about this case. But the first one I have is on the legal issue that you recited at the commencement of your argument about which period of time governs. What is the effect of paragraph 8 of the order, which restrains and enjoins HQ Metro from occupation and performance of the work that's going to be conducted? It seems like it isn't just a occupancy order, so to speak. It's also an injunction that restrains them from interfering in the use of the property. Shouldn't that be considered when determining the date that we are focusing on in the legal question here?
No, Justice Hardesty. The injunction language in the occupancy order contemplated that when NV Energy came on the property to construct its project, then the property owner would not be able to obstruct that construction. So the construction ultimately took place on just the very south end of the property, which is in the landscaping area and a little bit into the parking lot. It didn't even affect any parking places. It was construction in the landscaping area. So at no time until January 8th, 2015, was anyone obstructed from using
that parking lot. Well, it may have turned out that way, but they didn't know when the construction was going to commence. So doesn't this order limit the property owner's use of the property or access to it? I mean, they can't go on to this space. I suppose they could use it for some temporary purpose, but in effect, they've been restrained from interfering in NV Energy's initiation of construction work on the subject property, right?
Well, in fact, there was no restraint whatsoever. Cars drove on that parking lot. The landscaping stayed in place. No one was aware that there was any NV Energy occupancy order other than the lawyers and the parties who were aware of the existence of the occupancy order, but it wouldn't have been apparent out at the property. Cars drove along that section of the parking lot. There was no obstruction.
All right, and then the other question I had for you, you've gotten into the business about the price discount and so on, but Clark County knew about this whole thing before it purchased the property. Why wasn't that addressed in the agreements? There seems to be a recitation in one of the paragraphs of the agreement, but no specific allocation made. You seem to fault the seller for not raising the question about allocation, but why didn't Clark County address it in their agreement?
Well, both parties were aware of the pending condemnation case.
Yeah.
And there would have there
and this order.
And
this
occupancy order, absolutely. Yes.
I'm sorry,
it's a recorded document, yes.
Yeah. So why should this court undertake some allocation or review evidence about whether a price was discounted or not when the parties themselves didn't do that? Why should we do that?
Justice Hardy, under the Argier case and under the Bus Stew case, it's very clear that there is no taking until there is entry into possession and construction on the property. So at that point, there would not have been any argument for discounting the purchase price. In Argier, it's very clear that in that case, the occupancy order and the installation were nearly simultaneous. And if you take a very close look at that case, you'll see that the occupancy order is mentioned only one time. It's in the second sentence of the case, and it's mentioned only in passing.
Doesn't the fact that it was almost simultaneous make the question, I'm not sure Archer answers the question.
Well, the focus in Argier was very, very clearly who owned the property upon entry into physical possession. And clearly that didn't happen in this case until January 8th of 2015 when Clark County owned the property. The occupancy order is not mentioned again in the case after the second sentence. It's clearly not mentioned in the holding because the focus, like I say, is entirely on entry into possession, not a mere right to enter into possession.
Ms. Nielsen, in your view, what date should be used to value the property or value the easement? Is it the date of the order of immediate occupancy? Is it the date of actual occupancy? When is it? Doesn't our case law answer that, in your opinion?
Well, we're not here to discuss valuation of this transmission line easement because we've already stipulated that the value is $775,000, and so the question then merely is, which of the two parties, the vendor or the purchaser, are entitled to the compensation that's already been agreed to.
Well, the reason I asked the question is I think the your opponents are arguing that the occupancy takes place the date of the order was entered with the injunction and all that. You're saying, no, it's the actual date they went on. So I guess that's the issue we got to decide. But my understanding was you value it as the date of the order of immediate occupancy, and it's done. That's what's normally done. But if I'm incorrect, please tell me.
I think there was no date evaluation issue pending in this case because we used the date of first service of summons and complaint as the date evaluation in this case. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, but if I may, to Justice Givens' question, why would we have jurisprudence that establishes valuation on the order of entry, which is what I think is our jurisprudence, and then have jurisprudence that sets a allocation date that's different? What would be the rationale that one would put in an order or a disposition or an opinion that would choose those dates differently, and the significance of them?
Well, the date of value is established in NRS Chapter 37 as the date of first service of summons and complaint. First service of the summons and complaint, but that does not necessarily establish that there has been a taking, particularly under all of the case law that we've cited.
Okay. Thank you. On behalf of HQ Metro.
Good morning. May it please the court. Amy Sugden on behalf of the respondents, HQ Metro LLC. I do also have with me at the table Brian Padgett from our law office as well. I'll be doing all the argument this morning. Both the county and HQ Metro agree that Argier and the Nevada Supreme Court has previously addressed this issue about when do condemnation rights vest. And Argier's makes it clear that equity mandates vesting occurs when a condemning agency enters into possession of the landowner's property. So the question then becomes, what does possession mean? Under the county's argument, they say that possession means construction. I submit that NRS Chapter 37 has clearly defined what possession means, and the case law further supports that possession is obtained when occupancy is obtained. That is the right in which the condemner has the ability to come in and use that property. It is the point in time, a definite point in time, we can all look to and rely on to say at that point there was an interference with the property. It is at that point in which the condemnation rights vest in that owner. Here, NV Energy, as we agree, filed the complaint in the May of 2013. Shortly thereafter, they moved for occupancy. The parties worked together to stipulate. An order for occupancy was granted on October 15, 2013, when my client, HQ Metro, was the owner. At that point, it was also recorded against the property. Again, putting on notice to the rest of the world, this property has been interfered with. It has this encumbrance on it. So equity mandates that at that point in time, the landowner is entitled to the proceeds because they've been disturbed. Any subsequent purchaser takes, as I believe, you know, we've acknowledged here too, the county knew they were a defendant in this action. So when they took the property subsequently a year later after occupancy, they have the ability to negotiate for those condemnation right proceeds if they so wanted. They did not do so. And Argiers makes it clear that if you want to convey those rights to compensation, you must do so explicitly. The contracts were silent, we agree on that. So therefore, the rule stays in place that the landowner at the time, HQ Metro, is entitled to those proceeds.
Does it matter whether there's an injunction or a restriction on use? Does it matter at all? Is it like a red herring as to whether or not HQ would be entitled to the to the funds?
I agree in that, you know, the order specifically says, and it makes clear to our point on the disturbance, Your Honor, that when there is an interference, they're enjoined, the defendants, all of them, from interfering with the condemner's right to come in and do the work they need to, pending the litigation being, you know, ultimately to the point of just compensation being awarded. So, yes, I think it's factually relevant because, again, it focuses on what the court, you know, this court has said. When is the property interfered with? At that point, I no longer have all my bundles of sticks, you know, to go back to law school. I've given one of those sticks away to the condemner. So I do think, Justice Cherry, it's important that it is in that order. It solidifies the intent and purpose to let the condemner go forward with those rights and do the work necessary to complete their construction, well, again, while we go on to fight over the amount that ultimately will be awarded. So I just wanted to reiterate that in chapter, and I'm sorry, I hope I answered your question.
No, yes.
Okay. In chapter 37, we have a lot of great examples of this word possession and how it's used. And so when the court previously used the word possession, they didn't say construction, they didn't say use, they said possession. So what makes sense is to look at chapter 37 and see the examples where it's relied upon in the context of obtaining an order for occupancy. We cite those in our brief. First and foremost, NRS 37-100 says specifically, before the plaintiff, the condemner, obtains possession, the plaintiff is required to give the property owner all the appraisals. After that point, the condemner obtains an order permitting the plaintiff, again the condemner, to occupy the premises sought, and pending the entry of final judgment, do the work thereon as needed. So again, we see clearly the legislative intent was that possession is that legal right, that legal interference, a defined point in time. I think contrary, if you were to accept the county's argument, you're going to open up a slippery slope of what is construction. You know, what's beautiful about the condemnation order, I can point to an exact date and time, October 15th, 2013. It's concrete, it's easy to ascertain. If you were to go with the county's argument, when does construction occur? I submit to you that could be surveying, it could be soil bearing. Does that mean putting a shovel in dirt? And you're going to open up a Pandora's box in an inquiry that I think is going to lead to a lot more cases right back here before you all. You have a very efficient and legally supportable way of recognizing the order for occupancy herein based on the whole construct of Chapter 37. Again, not only is it just cited in the 37-100 provision, we can turn to 37.170, where again it says the plaintiff, if already in possession, may continue thereafter, and if not, the court shall, upon the motion, authorize the plaintiff to take possession of and use of the property. And this is about allowing the condemner to continue on into possession pending the conclusion of the litigation. I cite to this because it all goes back to this idea that possession is obtained when occupancy order is obtained to immediately occupy and make use of the property. It's irrelevant at what point they actually come in. I think the record supports that even if you were to, again, go with the argument that the county submits, there's a declaration that I know they rely on by an NV Energy employee about when construction was done in the TCE. But the appraiser also for the power company noted that prior to the work that was done in the TCE, anything else wasn't done in the permanent construction easement area. So we're not even certain at what point in time, again, because it was clearly prior to those dates in January 15 when the county owned the property, there was entry into the property for purposes of the project by the power company prior to then. And so the record doesn't support when exactly that was, leaving us with, again, an ambiguity that can be avoided simply by relying on the order for occupancy. As far as the discount that was paid, again, I think it's a red herring because, as we talked about before, the parties have the right to contract to the terms as far as conveying any condemnation right proceeds. That was not done. Here, as Ms. Nielsen points out, our appraiser was the same that for the eminent domain action as was done in the separate action for the county to purchase the property. Those are completely different types of valuations. Valuations done for eminent domain appraisals are based on different parameters, highest and best use, different valuations. The area in question, as Ms. Nielsen and we agree, was done in the land area, the vacant land area, versus when our appraiser did the valuation for the sale, he was focusing on the entirety of the physical building and using a cap rate. And so two totally different analyses that I don't think are fair to compare. Moreover, the fact that our appraiser actually comes up with a $220 million valuation for the sale of the property, and the county comes in later to pay $200 million, that's $20 million less. Again, the record's silent as to what that deduction was for. It could be for these possibly, you know, the appraisal that our appraiser submitted, the valuation that there was a reduction from the power lines. That could have been considered, but we're not certain as to what that was. But it can't be held as an adverse inference to a windfall, so to speak, that occurs to my client versus the county. If anything, my client was the only one in the record you see that actually produced an appraisal that led to our significantly higher ultimate valuation that we were able to negotiate with Nevada Power. The original deposit was $281,000. Through the work of our appraiser in our office on behalf of HQ Metro, we obtained another $569,000 for just compensation. There was never any submittal from the county to that money until after one, they had purchased the property and didn't make any rights to claim. And two, the settlement was already done, and then they came in to say, hey, we'd like a piece of that now. So I don't think equity, again, which is what RGR specifically states is important in considering in determining when just compensation is vested, supports that our client, who bear the burden of getting this just compensation, should then be able to turn it over to the county at the last minute. Again, there's nowhere in the record where you see the county's produced an appraisal. So to support equity, I think it makes sense. How would we even go back and attribute, for instance, the cost to these experts, tens of thousands of dollars ever expended on behalf of our client, to obtain this additional just compensation? I just may take a minute to review my notes. If there's any other questions at the time, but I think I've covered most of my points. Okay. I'd just like to do a recap, which is that, again, at the point in time in which the property was interfered with and possession obtained by the power company, my client, HQ Metro, was the owner of the property. It is at that point in time, a defined, easily ascertainable point in time, that we can determine those compensation rights were vested. I don't think you need to look anywhere else to these case laws from, you know, the early 1900s and other states. We have clear jurisprudence in Nevada by this court making it clear possession, which is a very specific word used throughout the chapter to mean when the entry is allowed via the order for occupancy. Therefore, we respectfully request that you affirm the lower court's decision that our client is entitled to the proceeds. Clark County had every opportunity to come in and negotiate for these. It did not, and it cannot now receive a windfall a year after it closed the property to try and ascertain rights to those proceeds. Thank you.
Rebuttal on behalf of Clark County.
Wilson, so Argier relies on Brooks in large part, at least it certainly adopts the reasoning. So if Brooks stands to the proposition that was adopted in Argier's that just compensation substitutes for the lost interest in the property, HQ lost an interest in the property the moment that order of occupancy was entered. Clark County took subject to that interest, so Clark County did not lose any interest in the property. So why doesn't, why should Clark County get a windfall for something that lose? Nothing was taken from Clark County.
Justice Stiglitz, the Brooks case that you're referring to, actually the purchase price there was discounted, and the sale took place after construction. So it's really, it supports us in that if our purchase price had been discounted and if the sale had been before construction, then the ruling supports us in that. It makes very clear that it's the construction of the project that amounts to the taking, and that's the point at which compensation vests. So in that case, the Berglund still owned the property at the point at which construction was undertaken, when the street was built in that case.
What's the evidence that your price wasn't discounted?
Well,
I mean, you took subject to, you knew the easement was there. You took subject to the order of occupancy, so you were on notice.
May I cite to a specific page in the record, and that is in volume 5 of the appendix, page 957, where Mr. DeFederico stated, "I am not aware of any easements, encumbrances, or restrictions that would adversely affect the site's value." So he was valuing the property with no transmission line easement. And there is no evidence that there was any discount paid. As I mentioned before, there was the opportunity for HQ Metro to argue in reply on the cross motions for partial summary judgment that there had been a discount paid. So we paid full fair market value for the property.
Subject to, you paid full fair market value for a property that had an easement.
There was no easement yet. There was an occupancy.
It was order of occupancy.
Order for occupancy that allowed NV Energy to come on and build a project. But under all of the case law we've cited, the taking it takes place when there's actual entry into physical possession. So I would like to point out that HQ Metro is using some definition of entry and physical possession that I think doesn't make sense. NRS Chapter 37 doesn't support an argument that physical possession or entry into possession means entry of an order.
But that order you're referring to is an order for occupancy. It doesn't say they have to come in that day, but it allows them from that day forward to enter.
That's correct. Under our GIR, it's clear that a taking equals entry into physical possession.
But in our GIR, the court didn't need to reach the issue that we're describing here, because in our GIR there was physical entry before. Isn't that correct? So it's not really on point for us to extrapolate that.
Well, Buzz Stew might also be appropriate. And under Buzz Stew, the original owner of the property, had conveyed it to Dark LLC, to a purchaser, and there was no construction of that drainage channel until the purchaser, Dark LLC, owned the property. In fact, the construction took place 4 years after the conveyance. And under Buzz Stew, this court held fairly recently that Buzz Stew was not entitled to any payment for any taking, because the taking took place when the project was constructed. So Buzz Stew supports us. And in fact, the facts under Buzz Stew are probably more on point with our case here.
Counsel,
your
time is up. Thank you for your argument. We thank both counsel for their argument this day. This matter will stand.